The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 741. It's the 23rd of March, 2017. On the podcast today, I have Dr. Stephen Staley, CEO of Upland Resources, that's UPL, answering private investor questions. Also on the podcast, Rob Proctor, CEO of Audioboom, talks about their recent fundraise and what the money will be used for. Plus, I have Jonathan Salomon, Managing Director of OEX, OEX, gives an overview of their business after the restructure and recent fundraise. Plus, I have Jerry Randall, CEO, Adrian Crockett, CFO, and Sharon Collins, co-founder of Venture Life Group, and they discuss some of the highlights from their final results. I also have Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talking about tertiary minerals, IMC Exploration, Taptica Group, and Crawshaw. And as always, I've got the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and also the top five most liked RNSs in the last 24 hours too. Oh, and by the way, I've got to mention, if you're going to the Master Investor event this weekend in London, then please pop along to the Vox Market stand. The guys will be there talking about the app, the website, any questions you have, any feedback you have, anything at all. And go along, and I'm sure if you talk to them nicely, they'll buy you lunch. They will hate me for saying that.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dr. Stephen Staley, CEO of Upland Resources. That's UPL ticker. Steve, thanks for joining me.
Thanks very much, Justin. Good to speak to you again.
Yes, now you recently announced your final results there, and so there's a nice little summary of the business and what's going on there. But for people that didn't read that and they'd not heard of Upland, can you give us a summary, Steve, as to what you're all about?
Yeah, certainly. We are an upstream oil and gas company. We floated as a standard listing on the main market back in 2005, towards the end of 2015. And we have, since then, we've done another fundraise. We did a fundraise in October, November last year. Our initial float was at 1p. Our fundraise last year was at 1.3p, so a 30% increase in share price over that time period. Market cap is about 4.8 million. We have interest in the UK, but also, as I'll describe later, overseas. We're looking at things overseas too. And probably worth pointing out that myself and my fellow directors own about 38% of the share. So we are very much put our money where our mouths are.
Yeah, and what I like about Upland, I've got to say, I do hold, for the reason, the transparency here, I do hold some stock. I've written a blog on you, and I like your dual strategy there, because I see a lot of companies employing one of these strategies, but not both. And so your strategy, just to get it right, sort of, let's call it the sexy option, which is strategy two, but the sensible option, strategy one, is to acquire some sensible, near sort of cash-generating assets and then build upon that with some almost company-making, sexy, higher-risk assets that can really, you know, lift the market cap and share price. And you see some companies either going for the pure exploration, which is the sexy side, and there's been a lot of, you know, sort of dusters of late of companies doing this, and but they haven't had that backbone of the near generating cash, you know, as a foundation. And I think I quite like that. So, you know, let's go, we'll go, we've got some questions here from private investors, but and I suppose we'll cover this off. So let's go to question one. First and foremost, and this involves a sort of sensible strategy one. It says, can you explain Upland's position regarding pedals 180 and 182 in Lincolnshire, and when is the appeal happening? So if you give a bit of background about why there's an appeal, if you could, Steve, as well.
Sure, yeah. Just by way of background, Upland did a deal last year at the same time as we did the fundraising with Europa Gas to farm in for a 10% stake in those two pedals, which are onshore and which contain the Wrestle field and also a prospect called Broughton North. As part of that agreement, our farming was contingent on a number of things, one of which was planning permission being granted by North Lincolnshire County Council for the few bits of work that needed to be done to bring the field into operation. In January, they decided not to give that planning permission, but Since then, Egdon, who are the operator of these permits, have formulated and announced what they were going to do in response, which is a dual track approach, a new application, but also an appeal. So Egdon running that process, and we will wait to hear from them as to what, you know, is happening when, but we believe that is moving forward. In the meantime, we have changed our agreement slightly with Europa, and we've extended the time available for those conditions precedent to be met to the end of September, which we believe is a reasonable time frame to get it done, and we still believe that this is an attractive asset.
Yeah. What's interesting is I had David Bramwell from Union Jack Hall on, and they're one of the partners here in these pedals, and they've since the, you know, it was turned down, they've upped their stake, and he seems very confident on the podcast that of course you wouldn't up your stake unless you had a bit of confidence. So he seems very positive that this will happen, and I don't know why this is, but it's obviously a good thing to do. And but like I said, one of the conditions you have there is that the fact that this planning happens, otherwise there's no effect to you, is there, really, Upland?
No, that's right. It is one of the conditions. So if that condition isn't met by the 30th of September, we can, if we wish, walk away from the deal. But we also have the opportunity to waive that if we can see that it is likely to happen soon thereafter, for example. So, we're in a nice position.
Yeah. And another question here is, if the appeal gets turned down, will you be looking for other near-generating assets in the UK?
I think the answer to that one is possibly. We are looking at a variety of other things overseas, which I'm sure we'll come on to. So it may be that they also bring near-term opportunity for revenue generation. But as we sit here at the moment, you know, we believe that Wrestle will go forward as planned.
Excellent stuff. Okay. Next question is, are you still actively looking at assets in Morocco and Malaysia? If so, at what stage are you at there? Now, I know it's quite exciting. These are sort of strategy two, and hopefully a bit more risk and a bit more upside if you bring some of these in. But you mentioned in the... I've read them. But you are still active here, aren't you?
Oh, absolutely. No, absolutely. In answer to that question, yes. And we're at an advanced stage looking at several opportunities, some in Morocco, some in Malaysia, some elsewhere, I should say, Far East as well, but other things in neither Morocco nor the Far East. It's a good time still to be looking at assets like this, because the industry is still recovering from a period of very low oil prices. So it's a good opportunities out there. And just by way of background again, why are we looking there? Morocco is a place where I've worked for a considerable period of time and know it reasonably well. A good place to do business for a variety of reasons, very welcoming of foreign investment, politically stable, some very interesting geology. We're looking at the onshore when you've seen some, you know, big successes there from the likes of Sound recently, but also fiscally very attractive. You're looking at 10-year tax holidays after you start producing hydrocarbons, which is a big effect, but also low royalty levels, you know, never greater than 10% for oil or 5% for gas. So those are excellent terms. Why Malaysia and the Far East? Well, two of our directors are Malaysian and bring excellent contacts and knowledge of the region in general, but also specific to the oil industry, in which they've both worked for a considerable period of time at high levels.
Yeah. And of the two, of say Malaysia and Morocco, there, which is further advanced?
I would say at the moment they're approximately of equal advancement, Justin.
Okay, I'm trying to push you. So, can we expect news on these in 3 or 6 months, Steve? What do you think?
I would hope 3, but okay. It may be 6. Yeah. I would hope 3. We are moving things forward as fast as we can. But I mean, as I think I spoke about in the last podcast, we make sure that we do our due diligence properly, and we will not rush it. Better to do a good deal than do a bad deal. And the difference between the two is attention to detail. And we will pay attention to the details.
Yeah, yeah. And excellent. So it's, and one other thing I'm just reading about there in the final results. Bull Hassan there is, you've welcomed to the board there. Like you said, his contacts are on, you know, for everyone there to read. But they are very well connected, these guys, aren't they, in Malaysia?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Bull Hassan is a graduate of the University of Sheffield, like myself. And he's been active in the oil industry for Shell for many, many years. He's now retired from that, but he was also a member of the Legislative Council of Sarawak, which is one of the states of Malaysia, so an MP for many years, and a minister as well. Yeah. Which he's retired from all these posts now, but clearly, you know, one do get some very good contacts with that sort of pedigree. And Noor Zakaria, our chairman, ex-Petronas, but also advisor to the government, very well connected as well, and based in his case in Kuala Lumpur.
Yeah, I'm just going to point out what's written here in your final results. So you say, Upland continued to be studying a number of opportunities in the Far East and Morocco and elsewhere with a view to farm in or acquisition to the rights of the acreage from the relevant government. At this time of this report, a number of opportunities are under... So I know about Morocco, and obviously I don't know the details, but you've mentioned them several times, and Malaysia. So you're saying there's something else as well you're looking at, not in these jurisdictions?
Yeah, indeed. We are looking at some things outside those two countries, and it may be that is the opportunity that we follow. It may not. As I sit here today, I can't tell you, but you know, we will come to that conclusion over the coming months.
Excellent stuff. And what's it? So, you know, with Upland, what's your, what do you hope to achieve here, Steve? I mean, what's your ultimate ambition? Where do you see the company in, like, you know, in five? Maybe 10, but let's go for 5 years. Where do you see it? Ideally,
I hope to have made our shareholders rich.
Okay. Does it depend how many shares we hold? If I hold one share, am I going to get rich?
Well, yes, it will. Clearly, you know, that's what we're here to do. Okay. We all love doing the job. I think that's the key thing to say. That we employ people who enjoy what they're doing and who have done it for a long time and know what they're doing. But ultimately, I mean, we're a listed company and we're here to benefit our shareholders, and we never forget that.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Last two questions is, next one is, when will you be generating revenue?
Okay. Well, first revenue will likely be from Wrestlefield. Our share of the initial production will be about 50 barrels a day, okay. Which will be generating us, for a company of our size, a substantial revenue. And that should be happening later this year.
Okay. And the last question is, do you need to raise further cash in the short to medium term? And I don't know what that is in time frame wise, but I assume short is a couple of months, medium term, maybe 6 months to a year, maybe.
Well, I mean, using those timeframes, I mean, with the assets that we currently have, so hard stuff, that's pedal 299, but also assuming Wrestle 2, then no, we shouldn't have to be raising money. And we will, of course, hopefully be cash generative before those timeframes are out. Now, if we do one of these phase two deals, it may be that we have to come back to the market. But as I say, we're looking at a number of deals and they have different sizes, different parameters. So that's sort of it. The answer to that one is it depends.
Yeah, I know you're very strong in your due diligence, but it's one of these things, isn't it, where, you know, shareholders are thinking, come on, let's get some news on this, but also don't want to rush it. And so, you know, they appreciate and respect the time you need to take, but also, as you know, as a shareholder, especially on you know, smaller cap stocks, very impatient. And so it's almost like they go, come on, but don't rush it, but come on. You know, it's one of those things. But you, yes. do you feel that pressure sometimes?
Yes, I mean, it's one of those fundamental tensions, but that you get in a small company. People, quite rightly, investors want to see news, but they are generally aware that things have to be done properly, because only by being done properly do they get the results that they ultimately want. So it is a tension that's there, but, you know, it comes with the job.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, one final thing, Steve. As always, on the podcast every day, I highlight the top five most followed companies. So can you give someone now listening who likes the sound of your strategy and likes the cut of your jib there, three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page, please?
Yeah, sure. I think the first reason is, look, we've got about £2.5 million cash in the bank. We're financed for our commitments and overheads in the near term, in the medium term. We have no debt. That's the first thing. So stable base. Second point I'd say is, look, we've done what we'd said we'd do. Phase one assets have been put in place, and we will do what we said we'll do for phase two. We'll put those phase two assets in place. And the third reason is that there are some exciting times ahead, I believe, that we should be, over the coming months, able to share some interesting and very exciting news, I hope, with our investors.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, I think always a good reason why I look at a company that you know, the management have some material stake in the shares there, in the ball, in the company itself. And you do, and the rest of it, just check out the share register. It's it is, you know, tight amongst board and management. Steve, thanks for coming on, and look forward to chatting to you again, hopefully in the not too distant future, with more news.
A pleasure. Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Rob Proctor, CEO of Audio Boom. Ticker there is Boom. You're right, Rob. Thanks for coming on.
Hi, Justin. How you doing? I'm good, mate. Thank you for having me.
Yes. Well, listen, you got a bit of news out recently. You did a fundraise. We'll go into detail of that in a bit. And you laugh at this bit last time I said. I always do this with every company that comes on. I say, listen, for anyone who's new to investing or new to the podcast, can you give us a summary as to the business? And you said, I think everyone knows this by now. But no, there are some people, Rob, who may not have heard of Audio Boom. So in a nutshell, come on, give us a summary as to what you're all about. How do you make your money? What do you do?
All right. Well, I'm going to change it up a little bit for you this time, Justin.
Okay.
I would say that absolutely we are a media sales company in digital. So, in essence, the platform allows broadcasters and, you know, people that want to create on-demand audio and podcasts to create, upload, store, and then distribute and monetize that audio. So that's what we do as a B2B platform. But what we do as a commercial company is we sell advertising, pre and post roll, mid roll, and obviously the very lucrative in red, host red advertising sponsorship or product placement, if you want to call it that. And more now we're getting to making bespoke content. So we have a whole slate of content coming out over, you know, the next while that is not ad supported because it's actually being made for the brands. Mm-hmm. Although it's just great content in its own right, it's being brought to you by a certain company. So that's what we do. We're a media sales technology platform company.
Yeah, so and I don't know if you've noticed, I mean, I certainly have. It's like when I'm doing searches now and again, and there are certain things that are hot. And I'm feeling that podcasts now are even more mentioned, you know, on a daily basis by bigger companies, bigger brands are starting to sort of, you know, realize the potential of podcasts. I mean, you must be noticing that because you're at the heart of that. Do you find that's the case?
Mate, absolutely. I mean, we're, especially here in the UK now, I mean, the US is obviously more mature and we're doing great there and we're just adding another two or three people to the sales team in the US. But here in the UK, for definite, the penny has finally dropped. We were in at Mindshare a couple, well, more than a few weeks ago now, probably 6 weeks ago now, 7 weeks ago. And there was 80 media planner buyers, all like, you know, 24 to 30, all got degrees, all pretty well educated, all media planner buyers. So we started off by asking them, you know, who in this room has listened to a podcast in the last month? Literally everybody in the room put their hand up.
Yeah.
We then asked, well, how many people in this room, your media planner buyers, how many people in here have bought podcast advertising in the last year? And they all put their hands down.
Yeah.
At that point, the penny dropped for those 18 media planner buyers.
Yeah, it's, you know, so, it's always, I can imagine you don't need to do anything else then. They've just proved themselves that they're not focused on where the activity is. I mean, you know, so it's a really good way of doing
it. Well, I think the other really interesting thing as well, and, you know, we're seeing it with kind of with bots, and we're seeing it with ad blockers, you know, our advertising's completely unaffected by ad blockers because we deliver the advertising what's called server-side. Yeah. So it means the ad blocker in the browser can't detect it's an advert because it's part of the audio. So the agencies love that. The other thing that they love is we know all of our content. We know the podcasters, we know what the content is, and we know when it's brand safe or if it's not brand safe. You know, there might be swearing in it or something if you're a football podcaster, but we know that. So when an agency places an advert with us or a campaign with us, they know they're buying brand safe and appropriate content environments to deliver that advertising. When you see the trouble that people like Google are in at the moment with all the brands coming off of that advertising because their brand has been placed next to, you know, hate speech and, you know, anti-Semitic content and all of that, they know what they're getting from us, and they know every pound they spend with us delivers advert. Whereas with ad blockers, 40% of the world's digital ad traffic is now ad blocked. So every quid the media agency spends, they might as well throw 40 pence of it down the drain before they start, because 40% of people aren't seeing the advert.
Yeah.
Again, with us, that doesn't happen. So I think it's a confluence of that. So the agency to getting it from a veracity point of view, but also the volume of quality content we have now, I mean, is growing exponentially. And our ability to match the right advert with the right content is getting better all the time. And when the NLP and the AI kick in from our own ad servers towards the back end of this year, we will absolutely be able to target granularly down to the minutiae, even the programmatic advertising. I mean, we're going to have, just on programmatic this year, we're going to have something like 1.5 billion available ad impressions. Even if we just took our number from Q1. Now, obviously, Q1 was 136% up on Q4. So, you know, certainly internally, we're looking to grow that number by an order of magnitude. So that's just on the programmatic. That's not even including the, you know, the in-red, host-red advertising where the big CPMs are.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's go to the bit of news. You've raised around about £4 million, and what's this for, Rob? Why do you need this?
So the £4 million, effectively, I mean, it splits into three buckets. You've got working capital, you've got development of kind of tech IP, and then we've got audience acquisition and content production creation. Actually, we've got the headcount to do all three of those. So none of the money is going on new headcount. In fact, we've reduced headcount in the UK by 35%. We've reorganized Australia. We've reorganized India. The savings there will then go to employ more salespeople in the UK, more salespeople in the US. So the way we're using that money, especially around IP development and the ad servers, and about audience acquisition and content creation, is very specifically being spent to help drive revenues rather than, if you like, classic working capital, you're just spending the money to keep going. All of the money is focused onto both the key locations, UK, US, but also the key business units of sales and commercial activity in both of those countries. Just on the audience acquisition and content creation bit, I'd love just to spend 30 seconds to describe why we're doing that.
Yeah.
I think it's very important. So when we acquire audience, so we bring a new podcast onto our platform, what we did, Up and Vanished, had 250,000 listeners to that podcast when we brought it onto the platform. Since we brought it on over 6 months, we've built that audience because we get our other podcasters to promote each other and all of that good stuff. We built that audience from 250,000 to 750,000 listeners per episode in 6 months, which is great. Yeah. But we're obviously doing a pretty high revenue split to that content partner because they were very established and they've got a brand, which doesn't help our gross margin. But part of our agreement with Up and Vanished, Astonishing Legends, and Undisclosed, and what have you, is that they have to promote podcasts that we create ourselves in the same genre. So those three podcasts I just mentioned are all true crime podcasts.
Yeah.
We're now creating our own true crime podcast to, if you like, to hang off the side of them. And between Undisclosed, Up and Vanished, and The Sonnesing Legends, then all promote our new piece of content. Now, obviously, we've got to pay to create that content. It's about $300 an episode to create it. But we get to retain 100% of the revenue off of that new podcast because it's ours.
Yeah.
So over the course of this year, we're going to be, I think we've got a slate of 20-odd shows that we're going to be creating over this year. But crucially, all hanging off of very established shows, so we know we can drive audience quickly and we can monetize pretty much instantaneously at 100% margin. So when we look to blend that margin, we're looking to drive our growth margin up by 7 to 10 points over the next 9 months, which will obviously affect the EBITDA. So that overall strategy, audience acquisition and then content creation to drive growth margin, sits at the heart of our strategy.
Yeah, it's very much what Netflix did, isn't it? From being just a broadcaster to creating content, you know, and Amazon, I mean, as well, you know.
Oh, Justin, there was me thinking I was going to get away with it sounding like I was a genius on this one.
Yeah. Like,
there's nothing new under the sun. Those content creation models that are re-monetizing existing audience,
yeah,
is just classic old school media. It's just not done in the digital environment and certainly not be done in the podcast environment for now. We're already doing it with shows like Atletico Mints and Hip Hop Saved My Life and the one with Edith Bowman. We've got No Such Thing as a Fish. All of those guys are produced or co-produced by Audio Boom. Those podcasts I just mentioned are all in iTunes Top 10.
Yeah.
And we make them ourselves and we retain way higher margins across those than just bringing on that big podcast, which is great because it grows audience numbers, gives us a great story to tell in the marketplace, but we need the other content that we make to drive the growth margin.
Okay, all right. A couple of other things. In fact, it was on your first quarter KPIs, someone commented on Fox saying, anyone know why they are stating available ad impressions and not how much actually served? So of the, like you mentioned there, what was it, 1.5 or 1.8 billion available ad impressions at the end of the year. So,
yep.
Yeah, what's the percentage of those that gets filled then?
Okay, so right now, I think many people will know the story. You know, we've had an exclusive partnership with Cumulus and Westwood One in the US to sell that programmatic ad radio spot type advertising. I think it would be fair to say, and it doesn't take a genius, if you look at our, you know, results over the last 18 months and the revenue growth, the fill rates that have come from that partner, I think, you know, we've both been disappointed. You know, that said, Cumulus is, you know, has got 10 to 15 times more pre-booked revenue this year than we gained last year. So they're doing a better job this year. However, we have negotiated with Cumulus Westwood One for that relationship to be no longer exclusive. So what it's allowing us to do is at a technical platform level is to be able to plumb in our inventory so it's directly available with one click to all of the major ad networks, so A2X, Target Spot, another work that we're going to be doing with Pandora to do that as well. So that's great. Also, we're doing a lot of plumbing now to plumb that inventory directly available through the programmatic exchanges directly inside the agency. So we're working through bits of plumbing, if you like, or platforms like AppNexus and Trade Desk, which will make all of that programmatic inventory globally available to all of the WPP groups, such as, you know, Mindshare and Zaxis and those guys. It'll make it available to publicists, it'll make it available to Habas and to, you know, the group brands under PhD. The whole aim of that is that it then effectively for that high volume but lower CPM programmatic inventory, we've effectively created a cascade of tags. So when you click play, we dive off to the ad server and go, okay, is there an ad available at the highest value from one of the agencies?
Mm.
If the answer is no, we automatically look for, is there an ad available from one of our sales partners? If the answer is no there, we then, okay, well, let's go to one of the ad networks and we'll just pick up an advert from an ad network, attach that to the audio and deliver it back into play. That happens in 2 to 3 milliseconds, so there's no delay for the user. But what it will do, allow us to take our fill rates from where they are now, and we're going to look to drive those up. You know, if we anything over 50% of the total fill rate is great, because there are various restrictions around how many adverts you could serve to an individual in 24 hours or what have you. If you've already heard an advert and we pick up that same advert, we're not allowed to sell it to you or deliver it to you. So anything over 50% is great fill. But before, when we only had Cumulus, that was our only source. We now have all of the agencies and all of the networks and Cumulus that are now able, we're able to fill that content with. So that's where the fill rates come in. You know, obviously it'll be a board decision if we start publishing fill rates. I mean, the one caveat I would put on that, we are a public company and, you know, we put out 10 times more information about our strategy, about our user numbers, about our revenues than any of our competitors do in our field. And when we're going in speaking to a content partner or we're going in speaking to an ad agency, having those two key groups know what our sell-through rate is, what our CPMs are and that kind of stuff, that puts us at a massive trading disadvantage compared to our competitors in the marketplace.
Yeah, yeah, okay. And one final thing. I mean, as you stand now, next couple of weeks or so, your final results will be out. And are you still confident of hitting, you know, the targets you've set, which I think off the top of my head was around about 5.3 million revenue and hoping to be, break even in Q1 of 2018?
Well, I think on the latest, obviously, we've changed brokers to Allenby, broker and Nomad to Allenby from Liberum. Which I think is a great move for us. I think this fundraise proves that. Also, they're a much more proactive agency. We've also just changed our PR back to Walbrook, who, with hindsight, did an amazing job for us when we first came on the market. You know, much scrappier, much more front foot. I think much more aligned with what we are as a company and certainly, you know, the way I like to work. But interestingly, on the note, so David Johnston did, I think, a great job on the note. It's available on the Allenby site. I think it's available on the Audioboom site as well now. Mm-hmm. Almost like an initiation note. I mean, it's pages long, very detailed. He actually got us to 5.4 this year, which, you know, interestingly, obviously, Andy Bryant at Liberum, another very, very well-respected analyst in the market, had us at 5.3. So, you know, two great analysts have got us a very, very similar number. Yeah. I think in our drive for land grab, that audience acquisition, and then hanging stuff off, I think the only change is that we've shifted out the cash flow positive to better reflect our numbers in 18 and 19 because we brought that content and audience on board. So the cash flow even number has moved out probably 6 months to 18. But the raise that we've just made takes us through to cash flow positive.
Okay. All right. Marvellous. One thing left to do, Rob, as you know. Three reasons why, if someone's listening right now, not following you, should follow you. Give us those three bullet points as to why they should hit that follow button on your page, please.
Okay. I guess go and Google the growth in podcasting just to see how big this market is. While you're there, you can Google how big is the American radio advertising market, because I know it's $19 billion, but 40% of all of those listeners are going to be on demand by the end of this year. So this should be a $7.6 billion industry. We think it's going to be a $400 million industry. So I think anybody can see the nascency and the headroom there is, because when the ear holes and the eyeballs move, the ad dollars will move with them as well at the end of the day. And I guess the last one, just looking at our share price and our market cap, you know, we've done the hard yards. We've done a lot of the groundwork in terms of, you know, going into markets, doing all of that good stuff. But we've now controlled costs. We've pulled headcount down. We've restructured both in country and in territory, but also within team. And all new hiring coming on moving forward are all into revenue-generating areas of the business. So I think as a company, you know, we've ticked all of the boxes, and I think we are absolutely going in the right direction within a market that's growing exponentially.
Marvellous. Rob, good to chat to you, and hopefully speak again, you know, not too far away, hopefully after the final results come out. Thanks very much, Rob. Speak soon.
All right, Justin. Thank you very much indeed for having me, mate. Cheers. Bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Jonathan Solomon, Managing Director of OilX. That's OEX ticker. Jonathan, thanks for joining me.
Hi, Justin. Nice to be with you.
Yes, I've seen you mentioned on social media, so there's a bit of interest in the stock. I'm not fully aware of the story. I've done a bit of research, but for myself and for others who are always tuning in the podcast looking for investment ideas, could you give us a brief summary as to what OilX is all about, please, Jonathan?
Yeah, certainly. OilX is a value-driven oil and gas sector-focused company. Our major projects at the moment are associated with unconventional reservoirs. That means tight reservoirs, and applying North American drilling and stimulation technology that's been developed in the last 10 to 15 years from the shale revolution in the US and Canada. Our main project is in India, and that's really interesting because a lot of people won't be aware of where India is at the moment. It's the world's fastest growing large country in terms of GDP growth. It has the world's third largest petroleum consumption. The government of India recognized that a balanced energy supply is critical to their renewed objective to getting the country going ahead. And along with that, oil and gas is a key in the mix. And to add to that, Indian domestic production has been in decline over the last few years, and the country has relied on imports. So, look, that puts us in a position where we have our main project in India, and OilX is a leader in the country in bringing in the unconventional application of long horizontal drilling and stimulation from the North American and the Canadian experience.
Excellent. So you're focused at the moment. Like you said, you've got projects in Australia, India, and I'm looking at your website, other projects there. But India, and I assume that's the Cambay field, is that right?
That's correct. The Cambay field.
Yeah, and it's
very interesting. Very interesting project. There we have resource estimates of gas in the ground, 2C estimates of more than 1 TCF, and 2C and 2P estimates of more than 4 TCF. So very large volume of gas in the ground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can you explain, for people not aware, what tight reservoir means? What does this mean to you, Jonathan?
So the oil and gas industry divides the current projects into two zones, conventional and unconventional. This is an unconventional one in that we're dealing with tight reservoirs, which means that the permeability of the reservoir rocks itself is quite low. It means the pore spaces that hold the oil and gas are quite small, and the interlinking between the pore spaces in the rocks can be really quite tiny in terms of pore throats. So to access the resources that are there in the ground requires a different application of a different type of technology than what's needed in conventional exploration. And that technology is long horizontal drilling and stimulation.
Okay, all right. And so where are you in regards to the... I know you raised some money a while back, but where are you in regards to this project at Cambay Field? What stage are you at?
So we know that we've got the resource in the ground. We've had three different certifiers who have come up with very similar numbers indicating very large resource volumes. We've actually drilled two horizontal stimulated wells, but at the moment, we need to do some more work to identify the technologies that will optimally access the gas and allow us to produce at commercial volumes. We have been producing gas from horizontal stimulated wells, but at relatively low rates. Mm-hmm. So there's a little bit more technical work that we need to do to get the right recipe and to match the rocks that we've got in the Cambay Basin in India.
I see. And is this ongoing, or has it started already, or what?
Yeah, look, we are very happy that we've raised some funds in London just last week. And that gives us the funding that we require to do the next 6 to 9 to maybe 12 months of work developing this project and pushing it forwards.
Okay, and you say that it's, as far as the market there in India is concerned, is the government are supportive? There's a genuine demand for the product there?
Absolutely. The government recognises just how critical energy supply is. So they have come up with new initiatives to make new blocks available to companies to bring foreign companies to invest into India. And Mr. Narendra Modi, the recent or fairly new Prime Minister, is very, very active in promoting the oil and gas sector.
Excellent stuff. And just to point out, you're not in some far-flung, out of touch region. You are quite accessible. You are in the Gujarat state, which is the industrial heartland of India, isn't it?
Exactly right. Our project is very close to the major trunk lines that feed gas all the way across India. Our objective is to get into these high-pressure pipelines, and to do that we need larger volumes. For the moment, we've been supplying gas into the low-pressure pipelines. And so what we're doing is building the project. We're adding new information. We're developing the right recipe to go for the larger volume production.
Okay. And so if I was to write a timeline now of your project, say next 3 to 6 months, what are you hoping to achieve next 3 to 6 months here, Jonathan?
So we need to do some technical work involving core samples that we have to understand the rocks better. And that's about to be underway. We're also going back in and working over 2 existing wells to bring them back on production. And we have applications with the government to reinstate producing wells back to production. So in the next 6 months, we hope to have 4 wells on production. We hope to have our technical teams fully supplied with the data they need to find the recipes to unlock the technologies that we would use to access this gas that's in the ground.
Okay, and do you have a sort of target production rate?
Oh, look, we do. On a per well basis, we'd be looking to produce from a horizontally stimulated well in the realms of 5 million cubic feet a day. And over time, you keep drilling lots and lots of wells. So maybe 50, 100 or more wells over the life of the project. So it's multiply those out. It gets to very large volumes.
Okay. And one more question before we get to the 3 reasons why someone should follow you. What about the economics of this? I mean, is it low cost there or?
It is. Compared to Australia or the UK operating onshore, mm-hmm. the costs are low. So very clearly, personnel costs are low, and the skill sets available in India are quite amazing at the moment. There's been return of a lot of non-resident Indians. There's been good education in the Indian companies from foreign companies bringing in new technologies and new understandings. And in fact, the capital costs of gear on the ground is actually quite low. It's lower than onshore Australia and lower than onshore UK.
Excellent stuff. Okay, Jonathan, listen, every day on the podcast, I highlight the top 5 most followed companies on Vox Markets. And to do that, people obviously have to hit the follow button on your page. And if they do that, whenever you release an RNS, they get it delivered straight to the front screen of their phone. So could you give 3 reasons now why someone should hit that follow button, please, on OLX's page?
Yeah, look, we would like people to understand that we are a rejuvenated, highly capable company with a reapplied focus and a restated commitment. So over the last 12 months, we've actually rebuilt the board. We've rebuilt the technical staff in the company. We believe we've got very good people and very good capability. We will use that power, that thinking power and that capability to realize value from this high potential project that we've got in India, the world's fastest growing economy. The large resource volumes are in the ground. If we can produce them commercially, this will have a significant impact on the country's domestic gas supply. And then we have the funding to go forward with our preferred work program. On top of that, we're looking for new projects to diversify and add to our portfolio in our pursuit of growth. So we think we have all bases covered.
Excellent, Jonathan. Good to speak to you. And like you say, next 3 to 6 months, it looks quite busy on the work front there. So no doubt we'll be chatting again in the not too distant future. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Jerry Randall, CEO, Adrian Crockett, CFO, and Sharon Collins, the co-founder of Venture Life Group. That's VLG ticker. Guys, thanks for joining me.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Now, you've just released your final results. We did a trading update a few weeks back, and it was looking good then, and these sort of confirm that. And we'll go through that in a bit. But as always, as you know, Jerry, what I'd like to do, if someone's new to the podcast or hasn't heard of Venture Life, I'd like to get a brief summary as to what you're all about, please.
Sure. Well, Venture Life targets the aging population. We develop and manufacture the majority of our own products, and then we partner those around the world. They're sold through pharmacies. We partner with big pharma companies who have sales and marketing distribution capabilities in their own countries, and they're targeting the self-care market. So these are products you'll go to the pharmacy, choose yourself, pay for yourself, take home and medicate yourself. And we deal with all of the ailments, non-critical ailments that affect you as you get older. So in areas such as cholesterol, skin aging, cognitive function, joint pain, etc., etc.
Excellent stuff. Okay, so let's go through some of the financial highlights for the year, ended the 31st of December. And Adrian's there. He's a new man on the board, so this is a bit of a test for him to see if he's remembered the figures. I'm sure he's well prepared. Adrian, if you can, highlight some of the figures there from the financial results.
Sure, Justin. One of the key sort of drivers, our revenues, can be seen there up 57% in 2016 to 14.3 million. That was compared to 2015 at 9.1 million. Our gross profit has also increased significantly, 83% to 5.5 million. And that gives us a gross margin of 38% compared to 2016, which was 33%. But the key that I'd like to get across is this is our first year, our first reported positive EBITDA contribution of 800,000. So a successful year.
Excellent stuff. Well, it is looking good. And I always, whenever I'm looking for a company, I'm looking to invest in a company, I always like to see almost double-digit percentage growth, you know, there, and that's what's happening here. And it's always a nice thing. Is exactly the most impulsive thing now, positive EBITDA, which is... we'll go through some post-period highlights in a bit, but to see if this is continuing, maybe. Let's go to Sharon, who's co-founder. Not spoken before, Sharon. Thanks for coming on the podcast. And
pleasure.
And could you go through some, if possible, some of the sort of highlights commercially for Venture Life?
Yeah, sure. So 2016 was a good year for us, actually. We made some good progress commercially. Just a couple of the highlights. We signed 13 new long-term distribution agreements in 2016. This covered 7 of our products, and Ultradex was included in that, and also Benecol, our liquid sachets. And I'll come on to that in a moment. As well as signing these deals, we also launched products. So we partner with pharmaceutical companies across the world. So we're a business-to-business operation. So these partners that we have, they launched products in 2016, and that will be ongoing as we move through 2017 as well. The other thing to note is that we developed 3 new products. We developed these internally. The first product is for onychomycosis, and this is a nail fungus product, so it's a medical device class 2. We also developed a product for rosacea, which is a skin condition, and finally another product for drug-induced photosensitivity. All of those will be launched in the back end of this year. As you probably know, we're also in China with our skincare brand, Labatty. We've made some really good headway in the second half of last year. Momentum has started to build, and that's continued into January and February of this year as well, and we're going to expect that momentum throughout 2017. And then finally, Ultradex. This was an acquisition for us in March last year. It's a product range for fresh breath, for eliminating halitosis. We revitalized the brand from both a sales and a marketing point of view, actually. We launched a very successful campaign in the autumn, and it's received very positive feedback in terms of sales uplift, but also from the trade as well. And internationally, we've signed 4 deals to date. So real good momentum building in the business that started last year. And I'll just pass you over to Jerry now, who will talk about the post-period highlights.
Excellent. Yeah, so it is looking good. It looks like you said, as Sharon said there, you know, not only are you doing good business, but momentum looks set to continue, Jerry. And is and if you could take us through some of the post-period highlights and to almost prove this up, if you could, please.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we entered entered the new year with good momentum, good order book. We'd highlighted that already. So we're on course in the first quarter, very happy with our trading. I think the reorders from China and the sales data we're getting from there showing that the Labatie range is now gained traction. We started the new year with some new deals on Ultradex and EuroH. We've now got approval as well for the Benecol once-a-day sachet in its first market. We've had some new commercial people come into the team. We've restructured one of the loan notes we've had, made the repayment a lot further out. And we've during this month of March, you might see our Ultradex advertising campaign on the tubes and hear it on Heart Radio. So started the year really well, good momentum, pleased with the trading, and we just expect to see continued growth in the business and the profitability going forward.
Yeah, and I've got to say, the share price is starting to react there. We saw a bottom, I think, what was it, back in September, around 44 pence, and now it's starting to tick up, isn't it? It's above 60, it's about 66 pence a day, and and I'm looking at a technical chart, and I can see, like I mentioned to you before, what's called the moving averages are all heading, starting to head in the right direction, which shows not only that the company there is gaining momentum, but the share price as well is gaining momentum. So you must be quite pleased with this year, and what's to come, yeah?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I think it's always important as a public company. You have to deliver on your promises. And we think this year we've done that for sure. And we're very confident we'll continue to do that. And the share price appreciation is great. I think we might have had some loose sellers in the stock. I think they've all been cleared. And now we've got a lot more interest. Now we're profitable. We've got a lot more interest from institutional buyers to take interest in the stock. So I think that's only going to add to the momentum.
Okay, well, Jerry, you probably know the back drill here. I'm going to ask you for three reasons why someone who's listening right now and like what they hear from the financial results and the momentum going forward, three reasons why someone who's not following you should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets, please.
Sure. I think the most important thing, Justin, is that we've now broken through into profitability, and that means we're sustainable going forward, not at risk us having to rely on the capital markets to keep going. So we've moved through that point, and that profitability will grow. I think secondly, we're in one of the biggest growing markets. The demographic we're in is the aging population, and there's more and more people living longer, and they're going to have to fund their own healthcare, and they're going to have to go to pharmacies and buy the sort of products we make. And I think finally, if you look at us over the last few years, our share price is almost half what it was, and the company's at least twice what it was. So it's a real bargain now, and people should get in soon.
Excellent. Well, do your own research, everyone listening. And Jerry, Sharon, Adrian, thanks for coming on. And look forward to speaking again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Great. Thanks, Justin.
Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is CEO of Brand Communications, Alan Green. You're right, Al.
I'm very good, Just. Morning from a rainy south coast. And, it's not very nice down here, actually. It's actually, it's stopped raining now, so maybe the sun will come out, but it's not looking very healthy.
I said yesterday, so my son's ready to go to school, or the one was, and one was going to preschool there. It was horrible weather. It was really tipping down hard, you know, and cold. And I said, do you know what's happening here, guys? I said, the spring is fighting with the winter. And do you know who the winner will be? They said, no. I said, the spring, because time's on its side. But the winter's refusing to just give up and leave, isn't it? It's really dragging itself. You know,
It's refusing to give up, but the evening is getting longer, and winter can only resist for another few weeks, I reckon.
Then the
clocks go back, and we're in clover.
I said, spring will win. Mark my words, guys. They looked at me like I was a genius. obviously, they don't know the truth. Al, what stocks are you looking at today?
Just, we won't tell them. That's
keep it quiet for as long as they can. It's like Father Christmas. Keep that quiet and for as long as they can. Right, what's happening now?
Okay, I'm going to rattle through these. I firstly want to mention two small companies. Firstly, Tertiary Minerals. Mm-hmm. The chairman, Patrick Cheetham, yesterday added to his holding, bought 735,200 shares, added to his holding with the stock down low. Clearly, Tertiary is making progress on its fluorspar holdings with the MB project in the US and Lassedalen and Storuman projects in Norway and Sweden. The company is also looking at options to generate cash in the nearer term too. So that's certainly one to watch. Tertiary Minerals, TYM, is the EPIC code. Secondly, IMC Exploration, little ISDX-listed company, IMCP. They yesterday announced the start of a comprehensive zinc works program on its base metal licenses in Central Ireland, near between the Tyne and Silver and S deposits in County Galway. Zinc, obviously, the zinc price is rocketing at the moment, and the IMC licenses in that area do have significant potential. So a program has commenced there. So that's two little announcements worth noting, and two stocks well worth keeping an eye on.
When they going, before you jump in there, when they going for a listing somewhere, main market listings or something?
Yes, indeed. The IMC some time ago announced that they were moving from what was then ISDX, which is actually NEX Group. My apologies, NEX Group now it is. From NEX to main market. That process has taken forever, and it's clearly moving from NEX, where the regulation and the requirements are relatively light, to main market is a fairly onerous process, and this has taken far longer than any of us thought, but I have been assured that that is still underway. So okay. Obviously we'll have more news on that when we have more news. So
marvellous. All right, so and, what's the other two companies we've got?
Okay, two more companies. Firstly, my colleague Dr. David Paul at VectorVest, yesterday looked at or discussed a company called Taptica. The epicode is TAP. Now, this company, if you look at the stock, it's absolutely had a pretty stellar year in terms of performance. The company offers big data focused marketing solutions for digital and online marketing. So basically, with the resource they have, they can basically tell if you look at an ad that you're actually sitting at your desk having a cup of coffee and eating a fried egg sandwich, and you've actually tapped on that ad. So it's detailed data analysis and marketing solutions. They've got major JVs with Amazon, Disney, Facebook, Twitter, Expedia, and many other publishing partners throughout the world. And this company announced full year results on Monday. EBITDA rocketed from $25 million from $7 million, revenues up 66%, $125 million. And the company's got $21 million cash in the bank, up from $9.5 million. And that's after it made three cash payments for an acquisition, a share buyback, and the dividend payment, which is just made. So this is a company that's really going places. It's got plenty of cash. And although it's a technology company, so it's not without risk, it's one to look at. And indeed was flagged up by VectorVest back in May 2016. So clearly that's something that had investors got involved with, then they would be sitting on a nice profit at this present moment in time. Current share price is 295p. VectorVest has got a valuation on the stock, and you can see the chart on the VectorVest website. Go to vectorvest.co.uk/blog and you'll see the Taptica article there. They have a valuation of 436 pence, so that's clearly some significant upside on offer there.
Yeah, Taptica's ticker is tap.
Taptica's ticker is tap, indeed. Yes.
I was thinking of Tapioca for a second, but I realised that's quite clever. Taptica, tap. Yeah, that's a ticker. Taptica's tap.
Try saying that after a few pints of Guinness.
Yeah, yeah. Explain that to the pub to someone. Yeah, I know a good stock. Taptica, tap is ticker. What is it?
Taptica's ticker is tap, yeah.
Just look for tap. Okay. And finally, Al.
And finally, this is I had a meeting with an old colleague from the Share Crazy days yesterday, and we were just chatting about a few stocks, and one that's been on his watch list for some time, and I took a look yesterday, and I think it's well worth flagging now. It's a meat-alicious stock tip called Crawshaw. Yeah. Now, the epic code is CRAW. Now, Crawshaw is they're basically butchers in the Midlands and the north of England. They position themselves as the UK's leading meat retailer. They launched in Yorkshire in 1954, so it's a long-established name. All of their stores are profitable, and they, when you go into their shops, they pack it. You can either buy fresh meat, which is packaged in meat packs, or you can buy food to go. So there's cooked food on the premises too. They're aiming to undergo a tenfold increase in stores in their store count over the next ten years, aiming for up to 200 stores. And the stock has the stock's currently got a market cap of just 13 million. It has been as low as 15p this year, and as high as 92p, currently trading at just under 17p. Peel Hunt broker, they've got a target of 60p. Now, last year, it looked like somebody taken a meat cleaver to the share price, because in September, it literally fell off a cliff from 80p down to 40p. And the reason was that like-for-like sales in their stores had really slowed down. Now, the group have made adjustments in terms of their cost base and everything else to deal with this. But in January this year, they reported a 13% increase in sales and customers, 13% in customers over the Christmas period. And although like-for-like sales were still down at 3.8%, they had improved from a prior minus 8.1%. So the company said they were confident in the full-year outlook, and the full-year results are out in April. And just looking at the share price, I mean, I'm looking back to 2012, when the share price was around 5p, and it was last at 15p, I think, back in 2013. So it's gone a long way since then. It's come back a long way. And with the number of stores they've got, open and running now, I can't really see too much downside unless something goes seriously wrong. But the company's been around since 1954, so the only way, really, I think, is up for them.
Ah, there's meat and money. There's money and meat, I should say. There's meat and money.
There's money and meat.
Yeah, do you know what? I'm just looking at their last half-year results for the 31st of July. And so their market cap is 13 million, and turnover was 21 million. So their gross margin, 9.8. But they made a loss of 400,000. But they had cash of 4 million. So that looks fairly valid there. It's like, if they can get a profit on that, if they can edge towards a profit before tax, then that looks cheap at 13 million when the turnover is 21 million, you know?
Well, don't forget, they're opening stores all the time. They've got franchises in the Arndale centres as well, around the Midlands and the North. And I mean, just going, we have a local butcher's here in Seaford on the south coast, and we order our Christmas joint there, and they are absolutely humming the whole time. You know, they're much busier, it seems to me, than the meat department in the various supermarkets around the area. So I think people are going back to local butchers, and obviously they've got the brand name. They've been established in the region since 1954. I can't see too much more downside here, and I think probably there's this one, considering the stock was trading at 80p, 90p in the middle of last year. There's got to be scope for it to return some way to that area. If nothing else.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the balance sheet here, seeing if there's got any loans outstanding, because normally that will drag the share price. So non-current liabilities, trade and other payables, so interest-bearing. Total current liabilities, they've got current liabilities of 5.9, current assets, let's have a look here. Total current assets are 6.8. Okay, that's fine there. They've got... it's worth going through that, because they've got... interest-bearing loans. Oh, not a lot. They're 56,000, that's all. It's on the fly here, so I'm doing it quite quickly. It doesn't seem anything out of order there, so worth looking at. So that's Craw.
Well, the dividend was also suspended too. But I would imagine that if the like-for-like sales performance continues to improve, then we'll return to a dividend in no time at all. So there's a possibility of a return to the dividend this year, and also some capital upside too. So it's certainly one to watch, and one to put on your watch list. And you know, it's worth a punt at these levels. Surely you could stick a couple of thousand pounds in, and you could be sitting pretty by the end of the year.
Well, it depends on how much money you got, Al. It could be
£200.
yeah. Cool. Cheers, Al. Yeah, exactly. And who doesn't like a bit of meat?
Exactly.
Cheers, Al. Thanks very much. Speak next week.
Thanks for speaking this week.
Well, the answer, the answer to that is vegetarians.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Vegetarians look away now.
Yeah. Cheers, though.
Cheers, mate. All the best.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Andalas Energy and Power, ADL. At four, Vast Resources, Vast. At three, Ascent Resources, ASD. It's always there. Number one most followed company on Vox, and it's always in the top five. Number two, it's a new entry. Number two, it's Frontier Resources. That's FRR. And number one, it's quite a hot stock at the moment. It's Infinity Energy, INFT. I think the second time most followed this week. Okay, here are the top five most liked RNSs on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. At five, it was late yesterday, Angus Energy. Update on next exchange bond issue. At four, again late yesterday, was Metal Tiger, exercise of warrants. At three, the first of two from Sound Energy, SOU, Badil, second case in point. At two, Sound Energy again, of course, Tendrara, TE8, completion of drilling. And number one, most liked RNS in the last 24 hours, was from Vast Resources, Vast. That's the acquisition of remaining 49.9% of Sinarum Mining Group, SRL. So that's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.